This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Later this hour, we're going to meet renowned diversity educator and advocate Jane Elliott. She'll be coming to town on February 11th for a presentation at Florida Gulf Coast University. Elliott is best known for her Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes exercise that she first taught to her students on the day after Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. But first, Florida Gulf Coast University presented its first ever research roadshow last October. It featured faculty student teams that presented their ongoing research in a TED Talk like setting. This is a new concept at the university that seeks to demonstrate not only the kinds of research happening on campus, but the kinds of relationships students have with professors at the university. The third Research Roadshow is happening this Thursday evening at 5 p.m. at the Sidney and Byrne Davis Art Center in downtown Fort Myers. So we thought we'd get a bit of a preview today. I'm joined in studio by Billy Gunnels. He is Director of Undergraduate Scholarship at FGCU. Billy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I am also joined in studio by Deborah Wiltrout. She's Associate Vice President of Marketing and Communications. Deborah, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
And on the phone, we're joined by Ivy Patino. She's a recent FGCU grad who has conducted ongoing research into whether nanoparticles can be an effective cancer treatment. That's one of the three presentations that's on Thursday's agenda. Ivy, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And as always, we welcome your calls. If you would like to add your voice to our conversation, give us a call now. The number's 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So how did this idea for a roadshow first come about? I give it either one of you.
So I would say that it came from two places. It came from a desire of our new president, President Mike Martin, to engage the community and find ways in which we could be out in the public and find ways in which we can provide more understanding and more information about what this university is doing. And then the second place it came from was really a realization of Deborah's team, who is in charge of marketing and communication, that our students are doing phenomenal research with faculty, but how it's being presented and how it's being shown really limited the potential audience that could benefit from their efforts. So instead of actually understanding what the student process was, why they were involved in things, what they hoped to gain from it, these were really very, very structured academic presentations. So it's really those two lenses that got us sort of thinking through this idea of bringing a show out to the community and making sure that it is available to a broad community and really makes the researcher, the student, and the faculty central to the story of why and how they do their work.
It's informational about the nuts and bolts of what's happening here, but it's also about the character of what's happening here. Is that mm-hmm. an accurate way to put it?
Yeah, and it's also a little bit about what brought these researchers and students to this research, why this research resonated with them. And there's some interesting stories to be told about that as well.
You know, it's 20 years old, still a relatively new school. So part of this is probably just trying to remind people in the community that the school has grown up. Is that accurate?
It's very accurate. I mean, this community is a fantastic advocate for this university. And the things that they do for the university and what they understand about the university is very broad. But this is one of these areas where the university is incredibly rich and doing some incredible work that we are not as effective getting and sharing those stories out to the larger region. And that's what we're trying to hope to accomplish with this effort.
You know, in reading up on this, I haven't seen one of these. You did your first one, I think, in our TV studio here. So I was there that day, but I didn't get to see it. But one of the things that they talk about is sort of demonstrating the kinds of relationships students and faculty have here. Is that sort of reflective of the still relatively small student-teacher ratio, or is that –
You know,
is it a still relatively small student-teacher ratio?
It's a very maturing school. But
right.
One of the things that was clear when this school was founded is that we had faculty coming to the university who were really excited about building a school and really excited about what the opportunities could be in terms of the teaching. And as they were building that school and they were teaching, they still wanted to keep a research focus. They still wanted to be scholars. And the only way that they could do that is by interacting and engaging students. So very early in the onset of the institution, faculty and students started to collaborate on their research. so that it's really been very much woven into the character of our university. And at this point, pretty much every faculty expects to be working with students, both within the classroom, but then also outside of the classroom, whether it's in the lab, the fields, the libraries, the conservatories, as they develop these research relationships.
You know, as I was telling you guys before the show, I went to school here starting back right after the university opened. And so it's interesting for me because we didn't have all this research happening back in 99 and 2000. So it's really interesting to see how far it's come. Mm-hmm. So I described it as a TED Talk-like environment. Is that probably the best way to describe it in a way that the listeners can imagine what's going to happen if they come to one of these?
I think that's a great way of describing it. It's taking some pretty dense research. Some of these topics are pretty dense, but breaking it down in such a way that it really engages a larger, broader community. And we also looked at projects that had a wide range of interests within our community and actually are impacting our Southwest Florida community.
You're a co-host of this event, Billy?
Yes.
With President Martin?
Yes.
What do you guys bring to the table? Do you guys do a little stand-up or something? I know Dr. Martin pretty well.
Yeah, and
I think
you never know with Dr.
Yeah,
Martin.
He's capable.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of our goals is to help explain why our faculty and students are motivated the way that they are, and to help provide a deeper understanding of what the purpose and the goal of the university is, so that when we see the different faces of the university, whether it be the education, whether it be the sports, the arts, the service learning, we see sort of how all of these pieces come together in really creating an overall community that hopefully provides an incredibly rich value for the region and our neighbors.
Who is the target audience? Is this probably for everybody, but is it more for people who are retired in Southwest Florida who are wanting to know what's happening here, or is it more for maybe younger kids who are trying to decide where they want to go to school?
All of the above. We've seen people at our last show that were, you know, prospective students all the way up to donors and retirees, and we really want the entire community to come out.
About how long do these things last?
Each presentation is about 10 minutes. The overall roadshow is just under an hour.
And it'll be a team. It'll be a faculty member and a student or more than one student that get up together.
Our focus behind this is to identify those projects which were really student-fronted and faculty-sustained. So they really do reflect strong collaborations between the faculty and the students. And therefore, each of the presentations is both a mix of those student and faculty researchers.
Okay. There's going to be three presentations on Thursday night. Let's skip the one about the potential of nanotechnology in cancer research because we've got her on the phone that we'll talk to in a moment. But what are the other two? Can you give me kind of an overview of what they are?
One is adopting a less is more golf swing. So our researchers looked at different golf swings, and I don't want to give too much away because it's really interesting, but you can put less effort into a golf swing and achieve better results without doing any damage to your back or your core. And I think that's really important for a lot of golfers in Southwest Florida.
Yeah, yeah. Believe it or not, I had Thor – the show about – I mean, it was before your first research roadshow. So we will link that on our website if anybody wants
to get a little
information. But I grew up as a golfer as well, so that all kind of resonated with me. But go ahead and
Thor
continue.
Thor Parrish is our student researcher and a part of our PGA management program.
Right.
was on the project. And then the other one is the persuasive power of Koreshin hymns. And as we know, the Koreshins are just right down the street. And one of our researchers got really fascinated. What is this Koreshin State Park and what's happening here? And at the university, we have a very large archive of Koreshin music materials. Mm. In fact, all of their archives are hosted here. So he went digging, and he was able to identify these hymns and music. And you learn a little bit about what impact that has on the Koreshin community and the persuasive power of music.
Hmm. You know, there's another FGCU professor, Lynn Milner, who actually has sort of written the book on the Koreshins.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've had her on this show too as well.
And the faculty member got a lot of inspiration from Lynn's book.
If you are just joining the show, we're discussing some of the research that's happening at Florida Gulf Coast University in advance of the school's next Research Roadshow. These live events are a new effort to connect the university to the community. The next roadshow is this Thursday, February 7th at 5 p.m. at the Sidney and Burn Davis Arts Center in downtown Fort Myers. My guests are Billy Gunnels, he's Director of Undergraduate Scholarship at FGCU, and Deborah Wiltrout, she's Associate Vice President of Marketing and Communications at the university. To make a comment or ask a question, give us a call now. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. We have a third guest who is on the phone. It's Ivy Patino. She's a recent FGCU graduate who is going to be presenting on Thursday night. So we're going to pivot to you now. Ivy, what you're a recent FGCU graduate. Where are you now, and what are you doing?
So right now I am back home studying for my MCAT. I just applied for a job in the hospital as a medical scribe. So I'm going to begin my training in the next couple weeks. So I'll be working in the hospital, taking the MCAT, and hopefully getting into medical school soon.
What was your what is your degree here at FGCU in, and how did you wind up pursuing that that course of research and scholarship?
So my degree is in biology with a minor in chemistry. I decided to pursue biology after I had a knee surgery, and I was really intrigued in medicine, and then I really decided to pursue a career as a physician, and I met some really great professors at FGCU, like Dr. Rhodes and Dr. Lee, and I decided to do a medical mission trip with some students from FGCU with Global Medical Brigade, and I got really close to Dr. Lee because she was our faculty mentor on the trip, and I was just really intrigued in the work that she was doing with nanoparticles and cancer research, so I was able to work with her on a project to see if we can target breast cancer cells with the nanotechnology that she was working with.
So describe this potential of nanotechnology and cancer research in as simple terms as possible, if you can.
Okay, so nanoparticles have a wide spectrum of uses in cancer research, but we specifically look to see if we can use these nanoparticles to basically mark the cancer cells, because we would be able to see the nanoparticles under a microscope. So we talk about nanoparticles in the show on Thursday a little more in depth, and we explain how we were able to use them to kind of like mark our cells as you mark something with a post-it note. And we were able to differentiate, we would hope, with different cells. So that's the next step of the project. We were able to target the breast cancer cells. The next step is to see if we can differentiate those cells from other cells and hopefully use that as a means of early detection or something in the future for treatment of cancer.
Back up just a bit and for sort of first principles for our listeners who don't really know what a nanoparticle is. How small is it? What defines it? And what is it made of? Or what can they be made of?
So we specifically use silver nanoparticles, but they can be gold nanoparticles as well. There are different materials. Nanoparticles are 100,000 times smaller than the diameter of a single human hair. It's just like a round sphere is what we use of silver that is just really extremely small. And we can add anything to the surface of the nanoparticle. So hopefully in the future, we're also conducting research on trying to load them with chemotherapeutic drugs, and hopefully we can use them as like a vehicle to deliver these chemotherapeutic drugs to the cancer cells.
So that is sort of the maybe two steps down the road as the goal?
Yep.
Uh-huh. How long has this research been underway, and how long have you been a part of it?
Well, I believe this research has been underway since Dr. Lee came to FGCU and collaborated with Dr. Rhodes. But I've been involved with this research for about the last year and a half. I started my project with Dr. Lee and then continued working with her. But I know she's worked with other students before me on various projects with cancer cells and nanoparticles.
Describe, if you can, for someone who's never worked in a lab on something like this, what's the mechanical aspect? I mean, what are you doing when you're in the lab conducting this research? Just describe what a day in the lab would be like.
So before you can even enter the lab, you need to do a lot of research, and you need to really get down a procedure and figure out, what am I trying to solve, what do I need, and make a full procedure that you can follow. So before I even got to step foot in the lab, we had to solidify everything that we were going to do. So then when you're in the lab, basically you are kind of mixing a bunch of stuff that doesn't look like anything at first. I was a little taken back when I first got into the lab, because it feels like you're not really doing anything until you can, like, see the result of your project. You would have a lot of different solutions and chemicals, the particles, the cancer cells. You'd be kind of mixing them all together, centrifuging. and then you look under the microscope and you see, okay, wow, I'm actually doing something here. Hmm. I can see my cancer cells. I can see the compound that we made with the nanoparticles, and I can see that they're interacting. So after the first round of images we took under the microscope, that's when you really, like, take a step back and say, okay, this is really important work that we're doing, and we really need to do it to the best of our abilities, because hopefully this could be one little step in a better treatment for cancer.
When you were a student here and you were working on that kinds of, you know, working on that kinds of research, when you would tell your fellow students or people who you knew in town that that's what you were working on, were they ever surprised that that's the kind of thing a student here like you would be doing?
Oh, yes. I was also a part of our cancer research program, and since I was doing my own cancer research project, I was able to talk about that with members of the community, with my peers, with my family, my friends, different schools, high schools in the area that we would go into and speak at. And everyone was very shocked. They only thought that SGCU did, like, environmental research. They didn't really think of SGCU as a big research school. And they were just blown away that we were able to conduct cancer research at a small university like SGCU. But I told them that we have great faculty that love to work with the students. We have really awesome resources, and our projects are doing really well.
Hmm. Billy, does this resonate to a broader audience in terms of people being surprised that something like what she just described is just one of the many things that's happening here?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I think this is one of the major reasons we wanted to do this roadshow. And we really thought through whether this should be something that's just talking about the research, or if it is actually a bit time to sort of describe that relationship between students and faculty and how that relationship is designed for the overall community. So, yeah, I think people are very surprised. I think they're surprised by the amount of work that goes on. I think they're surprised by the focus of the work and sort of how this university is so vested in the larger region. I think Deborah coins it as our living laboratory, as an example. And I'm thrilled that they're surprised, because it just means that we are providing additional value. And the more that we do this type of effort and the more we do this type of work, the greater the impact we have in this community.
Deborah, does having former students like Ivy able to articulate things like what we were just listening to sort of make your job a little easier?
Oh, it does. It does. And it makes me so proud. The students that we've worked with in this whole experience have been incredible. and the impact that they're having on this community. I think people are going to be really surprised, so I hope they join us.
What are some of the other examples of research that's going on at the university that, you know, that hasn't been highlighted on the Research Roadshow?
Scores. So, for example, we have some faculty right now that are working on flood management plans associated with hurricanes by creating virtual reality models so that you can look at different types of water, different types of flooding, and then how the addition or removal of structures would affect the overall flooding impact. We have faculty that are working with retention ponds, and looking at how retention ponds can either be a way of trapping nutrients or, when designed differently, releasing nutrients and getting them back into our streams, which is one of the problems that we had this past summer in terms of the Everglades. We have faculty that work in education, looking at how students are learning in countries like the U.S. relative to other locations like Hungary. We have faculty that are down in the tropics that are looking at sort of how people first interacted with animals and trying to understand what those interactions were based on what pirates were writing and what whalers were writing. We have faculty that are looking at sort of economic decisions of our area and how sort of, again, maybe like the impact of Hurricane Irma influenced the overall property values and influenced the type of long-term economic output we might expect for the region. Really is amazing. And each of our faculty brings their own unique perspective. And I think one of the examples that Ivy illustrates is that they all come with sort of their interests, their personalities, and then because of this type of institution, instead of just working by themselves behind their closed doors, they establish these connections among each other and then are able to build onto the students. So you have one individual who has an understanding of nanotechnology. You have another individual who has an interest in understanding of breast cancer. They were able to come together to do that work, and then by doing that, invite scores of students in. I mean, Ivy is one example of maybe Ivy, what would you say right now? There are 20-plus students working between Dr. Lee and Dr. Rhodes?
Yeah, I would say that's a fair guess.
Ivy, how did you find FGCU in the first place?
Well, I was going to physical therapy after my knee surgery, and one of the therapist's husbands worked at FGCU, and I started to look into the school while I was looking into all the colleges I wanted to attend, and I took a tour. I saw how new all the buildings were. I saw how small the class sizes were, and I was just sold at that point because I really wanted to have a personal relationship with my professors, that if I was struggling, I could seek their help or, you know, just have extra contact with them, and I really got that from FGCU, and that's one of the reasons why we had such a great research project, because I got to have the personal connection with my professors that I was seeking.
And you live on the other coast, is that what I understand?
Yeah, I'm in Fort Lauderdale right now.
Okay, so you didn't come here for the sun necessarily.
No.
Are these roadshow events filmed and then put online so people can watch them later, or is this like if you miss it, you miss it?
We're looking to do that, but I can tell you the experience isn't the same as being there.
Right.
So we're looking to do that, and we're also planning for future research roadshows. So we're looking at some additional topics to keep this going for quite a few years.
What's next on the agenda, or is there anything concrete enough to tease it?
I wouldn't say there's anything concrete enough to tease it, though maybe just by the examples I gave you, we have a lot of interest in water.
Right. Oh, yeah. And so do yes, we here do. On this show. Mm-hmm. We certainly have talked to, you know, Dr. Mike Parsons and Dr.
Yep.
Bill Mitch, and
yep.
I can go on and on because that's certainly a hot topic here in Southwest Florida. Okay. Well, any final thoughts, Billy?
No, I would encourage you to come out. This is something that you have never seen before. It has elements that feel like a TED Talk, but this really is about the personal story as much as it is about the scholarship. And it really is about how this community at large has had such a dramatic effect on what we do as an institution.
All right. And Deborah, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I'd also invite people to come out, and there's an opportunity to meet Dr. Martin. He will be there. So if you hadn't had a chance to meet him, it's a good opportunity to.
All right. And Ivy, you said you're heading to medical school, hopefully?
Yep.
What's your target? Where is your target?
Well, I applied to all the schools in Florida, and I applied to a bunch of different schools, like, all over the United States. They said that, you know, you should really apply to 8 to 12 schools, and I think I did 15, so...
All right. Well, good luck.
We'll see.
Good luck to you. We'll have to keep up with you. That is all the time we have for this part of the show. I want to thank my guests. Ivy Patino is a recent graduate of FGCU. Ivy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Billy Gunnels is Director of Undergraduate Scholarship at Florida Gulf Coast University. Billy, thank you for your time.
And thank you for having us.
And thanks also to Deborah Wiltrout. She's Associate Vice President of Marketing and Communications here at FGCU. Deborah, thanks to you as well.
Thanks again.
And last, I already thanked Ivy. The next Research Roadshow is this Thursday evening at 5 p.m. at the Sidney N. Byrne Davis Arts Center in downtown Fort Myers. You can find a link with more information on our website, gulfcoastlive.org. When we return, we're joined by renowned diversity educator Jane Elliott, who is best known for her Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes exercise that seeks to teach people the effects of racism by replacing skin color with eye color. She'll be at FGCU on February 11th for an event hosted by FGCU's Multicultural and Leadership Development Office. I'm Mike Canary. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.